business people will tell us your business model doesn't make sense. So you should, you know, scale down and, you know, change your model. And there are people who come to us and say, hey, if you want to do good, just be a charity. If you want to make money, be a business. Don't be in between. Like, what's a social enterprise? So it's just a very sticky spot that is very hard to find reference as well, because there isn't too many people out there that we can refer to. A few that we can definitely learn from, because social enterprise as a concept is not very mature yet overall. So a lot of people do not understand that a social enterprise is a business that has to make profit, because you don't rely on like donations and so on. But at the same time, it has to be impact driven, because as a business, you create an impact through the business itself. It is integrated.
Simply put, this is the balance that social enterprises have to strike. The social aspect means that they're there to create a positive impact in the community. And the enterprise side means that they need to operate as a business and be profitable. Today, we're exploring how that very balance is achieved by Picha Eats, a social enterprise based in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Hi everyone, I'm Suzanne from Picha Eats. I'm one of the three co-founders for this social enterprise in Malaysia that aims to empower lives among the refugee community through a food business. And we've been doing this since 2016 for about 6 years.
I'm Rama Shakaki, and you're listening to Innovate with Purpose, the official podcast of Expo Live, an innovation program by Expo 2020 Dubai. Around the world, there are more than 82 million people who have been forced to leave their homes. Whether it is war or persecution or some other danger, the number of refugees and migrants is going up. Malaysia is host to more than 180,000 registered refugees with the United Nations. For Suzanne, she first started working with refugees during her time in university.
For me, myself, I personally really love working with kids. So I thought, hey, I want to volunteer as a teacher somewhere. And just 10 minutes away from my university, there was a refugee learning center with kids from Myanmar. And I started volunteering there. And as I was doing that, I realized that these kids, they are really great kids, but they do not have teachers.
Suzanne and a few of her friends from university would go to volunteer there to teach the refugee kids. And it was through this experience that they learned more about the challenges and difficulties faced by this community.
So in Malaysia, refugees do not have like a legal status that is recognized, which makes it very hard for them to find work or go to school, because they do not have work visa, they do not have rights to public school. So that makes things very tricky here in Malaysia.
So Suzanne and her friends set up a few drives to collect donations for this community, and also to get more students who are passionate about this issue to volunteer their time and get involved. But soon enough, they realize this is not a long-term solution.
Like, we go to people, ask for money, and then the money will run out within 6 months. We have to run another donation drive for money. And it's the same people that we keep going back again and again for money. So at the back of our head, we started thinking that we have to earn our own money. Like, we have to find a way that is sustainable so that we don't have to keep going to people to ask for money.
So it was a three-sided challenge that needed to be solved. First, how can this community become financially sustainable? How can refugee kids stay in school without having to drop out to do odd jobs and work in convenience shops to support their families? Secondly, how can refugees get a source of income without needing a work visa? And finally, how can Suzanne and her team themselves be financially sustainable? That way, they wouldn't have to do this work in a volunteer capacity and can devote themselves to it fully.
So we came up with this idea. We thought, hey, since everyone needs to eat every day and a lot of the moms can cook, why not try selling their food? And that was how the idea came about. So the whole idea of Picha is really to come up with a creative and innovative way where they cook from home and we are not their employer, we help them to sell their food. So that makes it possible where we are not employing them legally, but we can still help them to earn an income through this whole partnership. So at that time, we were in our final semester in university. So really maximizing our time there. We were getting our friends to buy the food. We were at our university cafeteria selling this food when we were not supposed to. But we were just selling them, then running away when we are done. It was very organic. It was very unintentional.
I love this ambitious and entrepreneurial spirit. Was this something you were always passionate about?
It wasn't like that. And it wasn't like, okay, I want to commit my life to solving this issue. It was very small, where we just wanted to teach, and then we wanted to raise funds, and then we wanted to help a family earn some money, and then it became like Picha. So it's been a very interesting journey, and including our volunteering time, I think end of this year, we will have reached like 10 years in this.
Wow, 10 years, that's a commitment. And how does it work? What is the business model that you set up for Picha Eats?
So the way Picha Eats work is very straightforward. So the whole business model is that on the chef side and on our side, it's a 50-50 partnership. And how it works is that on the chef side, they will buy ingredients and they will source for ingredients. And whatever is the cost of the dish, we will pay them double. So 100% profit. And whatever that we pay the chef, we will sell it at double the price, where the double the price is used to cover everything else, including logistics, packaging, marketing, customer service, operations, and the running of the business. So it's a very straightforward multiplication kind of business model. If you look at it, it's 50-50, where out of the total sales amount, 50% goes to the chef, another 50% comes to us. The chef cover ingredient costs, the rest is the profit, where we cover everything else. And when there's profit, it rolls back to the business. So currently we have 16 chefs who are from Palestine, Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and also Iraq.
It's a beautiful solution. Without the need for the intricacies of work permits and visas, the refugees can earn an income through this venture. At the same time, it's a way of cultural expression that goes beyond language.
So for example, here in Malaysia, we can rarely find a very good maklubah or lamb mansaf, but the chef who come from this country, they make it and we sell it and people love it. So dolma, you rarely find it even in Arabic restaurants here because it's such a special taste, but we start selling those kunafa and things like that. And I think it brings them so much joy when we tell them, hey, the client love your musakhan, and they're like, oh, so happy. And if you go through our Google review, the clients really love their food, and that brings them that sense of dignity and that sense of pride as well, that they come from this country with such rich culture. And we also introduce a lot more spices to Malaysians, like for example sumak. We never knew about sumak.
Although Picha Eats is serving a very practical need for refugee communities to earn an income, it's also become a form of cultural exchange, a way for refugees to share their identity and a way for Malaysians to learn about new foods. Suzanne shares a couple of stories from the chefs that she works with.
One of our chefs, her name is Dahlia, so we call her Chef Dahlia. She's from Gaza, Palestine. And before joining Picha, she was at home taking care of her kids, where her husband sells shawarma outside. So they had enough, but not enough. Like just enough for bare minimum, but not enough for them to even celebrate Eid.
So Dahlia started working with Picha Eats to earn money to support her family. And through that, she's been able to send her kids to Arabic classes and to send money back to Gaza to her family there.
And on top of that, what is most impressive is that when she has so much sales and order, she hires another refugee single mother to help her in the kitchen and she pays her. So she is then creating opportunity for more people to help build her kitchen. And we also have another chef who is from Afghanistan. Currently, she has resettled in Melbourne. So we are very happy for her as well. She was a nurse before she became a refugee. And here in Malaysia, after her finances is so stable from cooking with Picha, she kind of became the community leader, where people will come to her house to ask for rice, ask for flour, ask for like bandages, or ask for translation services. And she could do that because she didn't have to worry about her own finances. She even joked that people call her house the Afghan embassy, because everyone just like come to her house to look for help. And we are very happy to see that, because it is so empowering to see, because we give you a source of income, you are helping so many other more people, and we are very happy to see that, because when we open that door for them, they are opening so many other doors for other people. We never want to see them as beneficiary, because they are not. They are really partners who are making an impact in their own ways as well.
But of course, working with refugee communities has its challenges too. There's the initial phase where Suzanne and her team will learn as much about the chef's culture as possible. That way, they can be culturally sensitive and respectful of the hardships these communities have gone through.
They come from very different cultural backgrounds. So for example, working with a Syrian family versus working with a Palestinian family and an Afghan family is completely different. And I think what is most important is definitely respect. And it is up to us to then slowly build this relationship with them for them to be able to trust us. And it takes years. It's not even months, yeah. It takes years of not giving up and showing them that we are here for them and telling them, hey, you know what? We love your recipe, but you know, Malaysians love it in that way. So do you mind changing it? And they will get very defensive. Like, why are you changing my recipe? A lot of them, they also come from very educated background, but because of the war, they have to flee. And right now they are recognized as refugees. But if you take away that label, they are master's degree holders, you know, they are accountants, they are great people. Like we really believe that they are great people. And in this whole business model, we always try our best to include them as part of the business. So every month we will check in with every single chef to ask them anything we can improve. What do you think should be done better? Is there any issue? What would you suggest to help your menu become better?
It's wonderful to hear how you have this approach of partnership with the chefs. I'm curious, Suzanne, what's the story behind the name?
So we were specifically trying out this business model with this lady. We called her Ganu. She's from Myanmar. And she has this son that was only, he was only 4 years old at that time. And his name was Picha. But the funny thing is, we later found out about 6 months later that his name was actually Peter. But it's just the way the mom was calling him. She was shouting his name and it just sounded like Picha. P-I-C-H-A, I guess that's his name. So we were called the Picha Project. As a constant reminder to ourselves that we started this business for a small family like theirs and we want to continue to grow the business for more families like Picha's family.
So it's really a name that goes back to the roots of this idea. Do you share the stories of the chefs with your customers?
Yeah, so we also take the responsibility to spread more awareness about the refugee situation in Malaysia and globally. So with every food that we serve, we will definitely put out, this is Chef Dahlia from Gaza. She first started cooking at this age and she came to Malaysia how many years ago because of the war. It's very brief, but at least it gives them an introduction that, oh, this meal is made by someone from Gaza. If it makes them feel more interested, they will then search out why are they refugees in Malaysia from Gaza. And that is an entry point of spreading the awareness. In our first 2 years of starting Picha, the angle was very much awareness-based than sales. So we were very focused on the awareness. And then we say, if you want to help, then you buy their food. And when we do that angle, we are able to reach people who are already socially conscious. So they already know about the refugee issue and then they buy because they know about the refugee issue. But we want to reach out to a bigger crowd of people who don't care about the refugee issue, but they love food. So right now, what we do is we flip it around. We will tell people, oh, this is an authentic maklouba from Palestine, where during Eid and during Ramadan, this is what they always enjoy. It is made by, you know, layers of chicken, rice, and so on. So we tempt them, pull them in with the food. But when they get the food, it says maklouba by Chef Dahlia from Palestine. It's made by this really amazing chef. And oh, by the way, the chef is from here. Do check it out.
The business model that Suzanne described to us worked well before the pandemic. Picha Eats was catering to business conferences, events, and large orders, so chefs would be making food for 200 to 300 people. That way, overhead and processing costs are low. However, when the pandemic hit, things changed.
So just overnight, 80% of our sales were wiped out. And we had to quickly pivot to a direct-to-consumer approach where we scale down all our menus to 5 packs and we deliver to homes. So I would say right now we are relooking into whether this business model is suitable post-pandemic, but we are still at the stage of testing, learning and replanning and re-strategizing.
So the Expo Live grant came at a critical time for this social enterprise. Initially, the grant was meant to kickstart the training program in the Picha Eats training space. But with the pandemic, the grant had a different impact.
thanks to the grant, you know, we are able to still run as usual. So with the grant, we continued trainings, but the trainings were done virtually. And with the grant, we also had a space set up where we started doing some frozen food in-house. And that frozen food was a new product line that we came out with during the pandemic. The hot meals will still run, but we are venturing into frozen meals as well, because then with frozen meals, we can scale bigger. Like, we can export, we can go to other places instead of just being in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur.
And other than calibrating the business model to this post-pandemic world, what's next for you with Picha Eats?
Increasing our efficiency, managing our processes, and impacting even more chefs, that is one. But long term, we are definitely looking into policy change. So how can Picha show the government that refugees can contribute positively to our economy? And we are trying to gather data, as what we have learned from the other Expo Life innovators. So to gather data to show them that, hey, you know what, through this business, the tax that we have been able to pay, the tax that maybe the refugee community can pay. So we are collecting all this right now to hopefully be able to submit something more concrete to push for policy change, have data like this that refugees do contribute positively to the economy.
Innovate with Purpose is the official podcast of Expo Live, an innovation program by Expo 2020 Dubai. Innovation can come from anywhere to everyone. Learn more by visiting expo2020dubai.com/expo-live. Innovate with Purpose is produced by Kerning Cultures Network. Episodes are released every Sunday and Wednesday. Subscribe to Innovate with Purpose on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, share it with your friends and leave us a review.